Learn more at remotepc.com.
And you're listening to WMNF Tampa, Sarasota, Clearwater, Community Conscious Radio. Excuse me. Hi, I'm Mary Glenning.
And I'm Arlene Engelhardt, and you're listening to From a Woman's Point of View.
Wow.
Well, another week.
And we, still kind of have our fingers crossed because there are so many individuals on all camps that really, I would just as soon not have the fate of the world, really, in a way, because all this warring is just, I think in this country, we've got to hit the restart button. We need so many new paradigms in so many areas. War is not a solution to problems. And later on in the show, we'll be talking to Sarah Anderson, and every tax dollar we put in, which incidentally is $10 more than any corporation's tax dollar, and I'm sure it's even further than that now, 24 cents goes to the military, and 12 cents of that goes to military contractors who made out like banditos last week with their stock prices going up. And what the heck is happening here? But anyway, I hope saner heads start to prevail and there is some effort to talk diplomacy. And again with Sarah, we'll be talking about this more. Somehow all these economic sanctions, I wonder sometimes if we really realize the terrible, terrible problems this gives, particularly to the civilians of a country. Whatever country you're putting those kind of sanctions on, you do devastating things to people. And I don't know how many more screws we can tighten on Iran. They've kind of run out. But it's perhaps the armed conflict is not quite as imminent as it could have been. But this is no way to run a country, no way to run a world. And the relief I feel is very, very limited. How about you, Arlene?
Very much so. And I must admit, I wake up in the morning or I wake up during the night and I think, I hope we're not at war.
You kind of get afraid to put the news on. You think, oh, I'm going to go out and jog first thing, before the sun comes up. At least I might see some birds. Well, excuse me, I got my allergies going today. Okay, well, I was able, but I was taping this with Medea Benjamin actually on Tuesday night, and she certainly had one eye on what was going down because we didn't know at that point if there were casualties. We weren't really sure what totally was happening, but because she's been involved in pretty much nonstop going to hearings and protests, Medea, and she's not the only one, and you probably saw the Code Pink was out there on Sunday. And they've been out there every day since. But Medea has extensive historical knowledge in that area, and also Code Pink and other peace groups have gone to both Iran and Iraq. And they actually live here in this country. So they kind of cover it from all bases. But anyway, I was able to catch up with Medea Benjamin Tuesday night. And let's give a listen to Medea Benjamin. She really has a great new book that actually is a really good primer to read, but I think you'll get a lot from Medea Benjamin.
Well, and you want to give
back to the show, Medea Benjamin, co-founder Code Pink, just an extraordinary woman, and in these very perilous times right now where we're really holding our breath and hoping that we don't escalate into a full-blown war with Iran, I can't think of anybody I'd really rather talk to. So Medea Benjamin, welcome so much to the show.
Thanks for having me on, Mary.
Well, I'm pretty troubled because when I called you before we started the recording, you were saying that perhaps Iran has already responded and is attacking one of our military bases there. Is that what you're hearing?
Yes, and now it's being reported on CNN that 10 rockets have hit the Al Asad air base in Iraq. That's a U.S. air base. So it seems like the response has started, and let's not kid ourselves to think that this is the only response. I'm sure there will be more to come.
Well, what we did, we kind of gave Iran the chance and the opportunity to respond strategically, so to speak, and It's so unbelievably troubling because the last thing the world needs, we need, Iran needs, is a full-blown war. And if we haven't had enough time in the Middle East to mess around, I guess that I just don't know what's going to happen. So, Medea, before we actually get into that, I think if ever we need to review some history, two histories, really. The Iraqi war, which we were lied to get into, you know, and, you know, even though millions took to the streets to stop us from going to war with Iraq. And then our history with Iran, also, it just behooves us, don't you think, Medea, that if we don't get our history straight, I don't know how we're going to pretty much straighten our heads out so we can actually try and do something to start solving some of these differences diplomatically. So first, Medea, how we got involved in Iraq in the first place.
Well, how far back do we go, Mary? There was the Gulf War of 1991 when the U.S. got involved committed some really horrendous acts during that, what turns out to have been a very brief war, and then imposed these very crushing sanctions on Iraq that led to the death of hundreds and thousands of Iraqi babies, and the chemicals and depleted uranium that was used during that war are still being felt today in the high cancer rates among the Iraqis in the areas they were used. And so that was the 91. And then we have the 2003 invasion where the U.S. lied to the American public and the world to say that Saddam Hussein had weapons of mass destruction. And the U.S. went in there telling the American people that it was going to be a piece of cake, that it was going to last at the most 3 months, that the Iraqi oil money was going to pay for it. And here we are about 18 years later, still bogged down, still with troops in Iraq, and with thousands of U.S. soldiers and hundreds of thousands of Iraqis dead, millions of them displaced. ISIS created as a result of that invasion, and a government in place put in by the U.S. and the NATO countries that has been very corrupt, that hasn't been fulfilling the needs of the Iraqi population, which is why we saw people out on the streets in the past few months calling for a radical change in their government. Now, all of that is gone after this latest escalation of conflict, because now no Iraqis are going to go out complaining about their own government. They're going to go out complaining about the United States.
Yeah, and when one watched any of the funeral processions in Baghdad with, you know, with the assassination of General Soleimani, that there was genuine affection and whatever, I feel so terrible for the people of Iraq. There, they've been suffering with us, our occupation. And then, you know, they and Iran have had some interesting relationships, but they don't really want to be dominated by Iran either. And so how the heck do they try and get both of us out of there, so to speak, so then they can form their own country? And now there's really no chance at all that they can, even if they'd want to overthrow the government, because they kind of have to try and make the best deal they can with very limited opportunities. And tell me, Medea, why do you think we really wanted so much to invade Iraq? I mean, everyone knew that Saddam Hussein, you know, or not Saddam, but Osama bin Laden, you know, was not an Iraqi. He had nothing to do with Iraq. If any nation we should have been looking at, it was Saudi Arabia. Do you think it was because we were ticked because we were out of the oil market there? Or was it just the opportunity for regime change and we wanted to do that? Why do you think we really went into Iraq in 2003?
I think it's both of those reasons, Mary. I think the U.S. and particularly the hawks that are embedded in this government in different places never want a government in place that is not working hand in glove with the United States and open for U.S. businesses. And certainly Saddam Hussein, after having been a friend of the U.S. in the Iran-Iraq war, where it was the U.S. that sold Saddam Hussein the precursors that he used to make chemical weapons, the U.S. wanted somebody in there who would be friendly to the U.S. government and U.S. interests. And, of course, you have to talk about oil. I always used to say if the biggest export of Iraq were broccoli, the United States would never have invaded. So, yes, it has vast reserves of oil that the U.S. has wanted to have its hands on.
And Iran, I mean, and luckily you're out with a very timely book, Inside Iran, The Real History of the Islamic Republic of Iran. And if our history with Iraq is pretty tortured, our relationship with Iran, I can readily understand why Iranians would not trust us, perhaps even hate us, because, you know, when they actually, you know, had the government under Mossadegh, they had the opportunity to really develop a really extraordinary, relatively secular country. And why on earth did the CIA, with I imagine the help of Britain, get conned into overthrowing Mossadegh?
That's right. You know, many analysts in the U.S. and politicians talk about our conflict with Iran dating back from the hostage crisis in 1979. It's totally wrong to look at it from that vantage point. It has to be looked at from 1953. And as you said, Iranians did have a democratically elected government that's only, quote, crime was to want to nationalize the oil so that the profits would not go to Western companies but would go for the Iranian people. And that was too much for the British, who asked for the help of the CIA, overthrew that government, installed the Shah, who became more and more repressive. And the organizing against the Shah was very difficult to do because of the repression. So one of the few places where they could do some of that organizing was in the mosques. And that's why after the 1979 revolution, when they successfully got rid of the Shah, it was the clerics and the religious folks who had the upper hand over the secular progressive groups that had also been very involved in the fight against the Shah. So that's when the hostage crisis took place, because Jimmy Carter made a big mistake of inviting the Shah for medical treatment inside the U.S., which Iranians thought was another precursor to an intervention by the United States. And the hostage crisis went on for 444 days. And after that, the U.S. continued to impose restrictions and sanctions of one form or another until we got to the Obama years, which was when the nuclear deal was reached in 2015 that could have been a real turning point in U.S.-Iranian relations.
Yeah, it's really pretty extraordinary. That Iranian nuclear deal, I think, was really the first real step that we could have normalized and gone back to having decent relationships with Iran, and could have benefited from actually getting to know them better and be dealing with them as human beings. Instead, Trump just couldn't wait to undo that. And, you know, if we want to look at Trump, so to speak, really going after Iran with the sanctions, et cetera, but all we have to do is look how he was just so completely focused on overturning that agreement.
Well, that's right. And for many of the people that were surrounding Trump, who Trump put in place to surround him, it was really about regime change, not so much about the nuclear agreement itself. But Trump allowed himself to be surrounded by the likes of John Bolton and Mike Pence and Mike Pompeo. And Trump also had an even cozier relationship with Iran's adversaries, both Israel and Saudi Arabia, than previous administrations did. And it solidified this desire to go after Iran, starting with pulling out of the nuclear deal and then imposing these crushing sanctions that people in the United States don't understand how Iranians feel that is a kind of economic warfare. They don't feel like they're getting into a war with the United States. They feel like they've been in a war, a one-sided war, where the U.S. is crushing their economy, making their lives miserable, actually killing people who can't get access to life-saving medicines, and that the conflict now is just an escalation of one that was manufactured by Donald Trump.
And again, we're talking to Medea Benjamin, co-founder Code Pink, and really, I think, foreign policy expert personified, but particularly the heart of a real peace activist who really, I'm sure, Medea, I can't imagine how really saddened you must be, because you and your group have gone to Iran. You've met a lot of people there. You've done some wonderful blog, etc. And I must admit, that following with ISIS and you know, the whole devastating situation really ever since we invaded Iraq, just watching the whole Middle East just boil and burst. I really did not know how much Soleimani was really, frankly, in many ways, I think, a pretty brilliant military strategist. I really didn't realize how they had formed, because the Iranians were very opposed to ISIS, and so they knew that Iraq is their neighbor, and so I really was quite fascinated, because I didn't realize quite all the militias that they had independently, and I always wondered. I thought, well, how are we being so effective, in fighting ISIS in Syria and places like that? Because we really didn't have the troops in the ground. But then when I've been reading about this, all about this now, and how actually the Iranians, Soleimani, and we actually gave them a lot of air support, we gave them a lot of intelligence. And so without their troops in the grounds, and also the Kurds, ISIS wouldn't have been essentially defeated, but now I think it's going to rise again. And I think it was really pretty extraordinary what he accomplished, really.
Well, it's interesting hearing you put it in that context, because all you hear on the U.S. media is blood on his hands, blood on his hands. But then that makes people really not understand why millions of people came out in Iran to mourn him. And they make up things like, well, the government forced them to come out. That's not true at all. I have many friends in Iran. Some of them dislike their government and would love to see a regime change. But they were very thankful and admiring of Soleimani, because he kept them safe from ISIS and other Sunni extremist groups. Iran was one of the safest places in the Middle East. And then other people feel like he had done a good job of showing Iran's strength vis-a-vis the United States, and wanted somebody to stand up to the U.S. And I'm just hearing now that we're getting news of these attacks from friends of mine in Iran, who I considered to be not very strong government supporters, and certainly not people who like militarism, and they are cheering on these attacks by their government because they wanted revenge. Of course, I hold my breath just thinking about what the response is going to be from Trump and how many people are going to be dying. But it's just to say, Mary, that people are fed up with the United States, and in Iran, this has united the entire population, who just less than 2 months ago were out in the street protesting their government and their government's economic policies, and were repressed very violently by their own government. Now they're united against the United States.
Yeah, when you're using a gun, you're going to force them, really. And you know that, yes, I know that Soleimani, that they created a lot of IEDs and killed an awful lot of people, but war is not a gentle business. And the business of war, if you win, you're a war hero. If you lose, you're a war criminal.
And why is the United States in a region of the world that is not ours? I don't want U.S. soldiers or even contractors to be killed, but why are we there? We shouldn't be there. It's George Bush who's responsible for and has the blood on his hands of not hundreds but thousands of Americans for sending us into the war in the first place. But unfortunately, Mary, we're not going to learn the lesson that should be learned right now, which is we have no business being in the Middle East. We only cause havoc, destruction, and that we should be, the lesson should be to get out, not to be sending thousands more troops as Trump is doing right now.
Well, you know, Medea, I remember talking to you when we were worried about North Korea. And, you know, I had no idea we had that many bases in South Korea. I just had no idea we had that many bases, like 80. And you know, that one could say in the past, ISIS and others, I'm sure, said, well, fine, eventually America is going to leave. But, you know, that we put all these forward bases, and frankly, I'm not so sure that we do intend to leave some of these areas. I think we kind of are using them as permanent settlements. And, you know, I think we really need to look at ourselves and say, when did we become such kind of, in my opinion, a warring almost monstrosity that is wrapping around almost like, you know, the snake of Ouroboros. And if we don't really realize, you know, that this cannot continue, that, you know, you can, that we shouldn't forget with Iraq and Iran, the just terrible 8-year war they had, which was absolutely brutal. And that's where Soleimani really cut his teeth. And the same thing with the Iraqis. And I you know, there, I remember actually Kissinger and Nixon, you know, not feeling at all bad if they both destroyed each other. You know, that was kind of great. And you know, that you can't even look at a man like Soleimani without seeing that terrible, terrible conflict of Iraq and Iran. And if we ever underestimated Iran, we should have realized how valiantly and really pretty smart they fought against the Iraqis, who were supported to the teeth by us, and who really have no avail.
And that was a government that had just come into power. I mean, they came into power in 1979, and by 1980, they were in the midst of a horrific war, which they fought for 8 years. So, yes, they have been battle-hardened since day one of this government, and it might not be a government that many of us secular feminists like or would like to live under, but that's none of our business. It's the business for the Iraqis. And those friends of ours who have been trying to change their government are certainly not going to have an opening to do so now. If regime change was really the ultimate goal of this Trump administration, everything they're doing is giving the regime more strength.
Yeah, and, you know, now to change the mission that actually we're going to now be after the Iranian militias, or the ones that have been sponsored by Iran, but they're pretty independent, so we might have some counter-strikes from them, too. I think it really is really pretty discouraging, because you really look at it and you think, well, now what? You know, how do we intend to get out of there, or do we intend to get out of there? I mean, I think it's really a very sobering and, right at this point, discouraging. But if any time we need to really stand up and say, this is not the America that I believe in, that this is a country that can, and there are a lot of people that would like to solve these problems diplomatically and talk and have some peaceful negotiations. But right now, it really looks pretty serious.
Well, it does, Mary, and to think that there is one man in the White House that has all this power, that doesn't give a damn what Congress says, that is not looking at what the world community is saying, he is just, and he has a tremendous ego. And so much of this crisis is something that he manufactured, that the blame is totally on his doorstep. And yet, what will it take to back him down? The only thing I know how to do is to organize in the face of this. And we put out the call to have demonstrations last weekend, and all over the country, people responded so quickly, with over 80 cities organizing. And now we have demonstrations happening on Thursday. Of course, there should be spontaneous ones tomorrow. And a big call for an International Day of Action on January 25th. So we've got to get out there and show Donald Trump that the American people are appalled by what he is doing. We're not going to be sucked into this this idea that the Iranians are the aggressors, and that we're going to demand that he stop dragging us into a new war, and that our troops come home.
Yeah, and again, we're talking to Medea Benjamin, co-founder of Code Pink, and I can't wait to actually read her book, Inside Iran, The Real History of the Islamic Republic of Iran. And you know, Medea, I cannot help but think deja vu, you know, because I was listening to a clip on news the other day, I think in 2011, when Trump said that he was quite sure that, because he said Obama was so ineffective as a president, and that to say to have a chance of being reelected, he was going to start a war in Iran, and Bush or Trump says this. But also, I'm thinking of Scott Ritter, and I was reading Scott Ritter saying that he is seriously questioning this contractor who was killed, that I guess they haven't even named who he is, but he seriously doubts that it was done by this Iraqi Iranian-backed militia, because they were like 500 kilometers away, and he honestly felt that he was guessing, but he said he thought it was more likely an ISIS group that is trying to reformulate, that actually conned the United States into making an air attack. And so they kind of stood back and watched their enemy, so to speak, be done in by their other enemy. And I thought, oh no, Scott Ritter tried to warn us before that there were not weapons of mass destruction. And now he's trying to question, really, was it that Iraqis, you know, Iranian supported militia group that actually killed that contractor? Not that that necessarily.
Well, and we know nothing about this contractor. It's
yes.
The strangest mystery, Mary. We don't know his name. We don't know what company he worked for. We don't know what his job was. Sometimes they talk about him as a civilian contractor. Other times they talk about him as a military contractor. We know nothing about this person that then led to the attack on the militia group where 25 people were killed. And I keep going back to the issue, well, if we don't want our contractors or our military to be killed, don't send them overseas where we have no business. And now with thousands more troops being sent to the region, their number one job is to protect the other people who are there. So we're creating more sitting ducks for the Iranians to respond to. I don't know if you've ever seen a map, Mary, that shows all the U.S. bases surrounding Iran. And sometimes it has a caption saying, Iran wants war. Look how they put their country in the middle of our bases, which is, you know, it's funny, but it's true.
Not, yeah.
There are so many bases surrounding Iran. That gives Iran a lot of targets to use to attack U.S. soldiers.
Yeah, and I think it's really troubling, and I don't think it's given much attention, but I have read it now by three or four different sources, that actually, that I think it was the head of Iraq actually said that the reason that General Soleimani was there is because he had been talking to Saudi Arabia, and apparently Saudi Arabia was trying to kind of get a negotiated peace kind of or agreement with Iran through Iraq. And if that was the case, he was actually on a peace mission, and it would really make sense, because if I don't know, but if I were Saudi Arabia or Iraq or Iran, I would decide that we've got to get our act together if we're ever going to get the United States to leave. And in other words, have you heard? And I've read that now in very good sources. Are you familiar with that? And I think that's a pretty serious thing that should be discussed.
Yes, absolutely. Mike Pompeo had a press conference today in which he just made that into a joke. Said, oh yeah, do any of you really think that Soleimani was there on a peace mission? Ha ha ha. You know, the prime minister is the one who said it. He said he had a meeting set up the next morning with Soleimani. He said that the Iraqis were playing this mediating role, had been talking to the Saudis and had been talking to the Iranians, and he was waiting for the Iranian response. If that is true, you know, that's just like mafioso style, because Trump supposedly knew that Soleimani was there and was having this meeting. I think that should be all over the news, but the way the administration is countering it is just to say, this guy is a terrorist monster, and of course he would not be there on a peace mission.
Well, Mindy, as usual, you're on top of things and Code Pink, and I wasn't at all surprised that you were out demonstrating. I was really glad to see on Sunday, and as you said, there's going to be an informal one January 9th, but then a pretty big one for January 25th. Now, is that the date that you're kind of aiming for? Because a lot of other groups, I notice, are also getting into it, getting into the protest, and you've got MoveOn.org and some others, some, you know, maybe a larger organizations. And so is that the tentative date, the January 25th?
Well, we can't wait till January 25th, especially since the Iranians are responding already and the U.S. is going to respond. And so it's a good thing that MoveOn and other groups have called for protests on Thursday. But we need to, I think we should be out on a regular basis. I think on Saturday we should call for another round of protests. The January 15th was picked as an international day, and I think we can keep building up and building up to that. But people have to get out now. There should be reactions immediately, and the reaction should be tell the U.S., to the Trump administration, not to respond with more attacks. But that we want the United Nations involved, we want negotiations, and I think if enough people start getting out in the streets all over this country, you know, maybe the Republican Party might understand that this is not going to be a very good election strategy for them.
You know, Medea, I really agree with you. I think the people have to get out. If we want to give peace, any chance at all, I don't think we can depend on the politicians. We've got to force them to do the right things.
We're already forcing them because there is going to be a vote on Thursday in the House that Nancy Pelosi has pushed for. And the only reason that's happening is because they are hearing constantly from their constituents. So our voices are really important to push those people in Congress. And, you know, the tendency is, Mary, that as wars start developing, more and more people say, rally behind the flag, rally behind the president. Now is not the time for dissent. Our soldiers are being killed. And let's face it, there are going to be soldiers being killed, whether they've already been killed in this attack tonight or in another attack that's coming, they are going to be killed. And that's when it becomes harder and harder to be a peace activist, but that's when it becomes more and more important to be an activist. So let's not wait until a significant number of soldiers have been killed and the tide is starting to change with Americans who have been anti-war, war-weary after 20 years, start getting rah-rah behind the flag. We have to get out in front of this and make the narrative be very clear that this is not about Iranian aggression. This is about U.S. aggression. This is about Trump's aggression. And the Iranians are simply responding at this point.
Well, Medea Benjamin, very well said. And thank you so much for all you're doing and keeping up with everything so well. And thank heavens for Code Pink. I was thrilled, as I say again, that you people were out there Sunday. And so other than people really getting out and protesting and really realizing that we will not have peace unless we really demand it, any final things that you want, or not final things, but any other things you want to say for people they can do right now?
Well, if they can sign up on our website at codepink.org, that would be great, because we have lots of things that we've been planning, and we need to be in touch with you. So sign up and stay connected.
Okay, Medea Benjamin, thank you so much. I know you're really busy, and do take care.
Yeah, okay, great. Bye-bye.
You take care. And you are listening to WMNF Tampa, Sarasota Clearwater Community Conscious Radio. Arlene, go ahead.
Well, there are a couple of announcements, actually. The Disabled American Veterans Recruit Military Tampa Veterans Job Fair is coming up. DAV and Recruit Military are joining forces to attract, hire, and retain military veterans and military spouses in the Tampa area. This is a hiring event for veterans, transitioning military personnel, National Guard members, reserve members, and military spouses. It will take place on Thursday, January 16th from 11 until 3 at the Amelie Arena. And so if you fit that category or know someone who does, that's one place you can go to talk to some potential hirers. And Todd Snyder will be in concert for WMNF on January 24th. And we hope that you'll be able to attend.
Okay, he's always such a wonderful singer-songwriter. And I'm going to put this music on by Laurie Anderson, because this was actually on our attack on Baghdad a bit ago. And then we'll be coming back with Sarah Anderson. So let me put this music on, and as I say, we'll be coming back with Sarah Anderson.
Like the 4th of July. It's like a Christmas tree. It's like fireflies on a summer night.
Well, I think I'm going to pod this down by Laurie Anderson. I think if it seems beautiful, I think that you're on the giving end rather than the receiving end. But anyway, I am so happy to welcome to the show Sarah Anderson. And we've been lucky enough to have Sarah on the show before. And she is with the Institute for Policy Studies. She is a Global Economy Project Director. She also edits, co-editor of the inequality.org. And she just wrote a piece, "The Threat of War Inflates Stockholding and Military Contractors and CEOs." So, Sarah Anderson, welcome back to the show.
Great to be back. Thank you.
Well, it's always good to have you. And it's kind of, to me, it's always kind of disturbing, the profits in war, because if we don't have enough problems in trying to get ourselves extracted from these wars, and now going on 20 years in the Middle East, that the last thing you need is undue profits by Bob Dylan's song a long time ago, "The Masters of War." And so you particularly, you're so involved with economic inequality. Why did you decide you wanted to do this?
I decided I wanted to do this because I was sitting there last Friday feeling very scared about the situation with the escalation of conflict with Iran, and I saw headlines that were saying that the stock prices of the top military contractors had spiked as soon as the news about the U.S. assassination of the Iranian military leader had hit the financial markets. And that's because Wall Street traders know that war boosts the bottom line of these companies. They'll get more and more lucrative contracts. And I have developed some skills to figure out, well, how much would the CEOs of these companies personally have benefited from this spike in the share price? So I really drilled down and looked at the CEOs of the top five contractors, and just so you know, they are Lockheed Martin, Boeing, General Dynamics, Raytheon, and Northrop Grumman. And what I found was that in just that single day of trading after the assassination, the value of their personal stock and their companies had jumped from $319 million on Thursday to $326 million, so an increase of $7 million just for these five executives in that first day of trading after the assassination.
Yeah, and some of the figures of the CEOs there, and you mentioned Northrop Grumman. Now, actually, the leader just retired, and so now Kathy Warden is in charge, and she made out pretty well, too. But the man who was in charge, he made, personally, like $7.4 million?
Right. Well, Wesley Bush had been the CEO for Northrop Grumman for quite a while, and so he'd accumulated a lot of shares in the company stock. And actually, he made a big pile. It wasn't quite as big as what you said. It was about $4.9 million what I estimate an increase in the value of his shares just in that first day of trading. I believe their stock at Northrop Grumman has continued to go up actually since Friday, so it could well be near $7 million by now. And this just goes to show that the outrage that I'm feeling about this is not just that this is an obscene amount of money for anybody to be making for any reason, but to be making this for reasons that have nothing to do with the performance of the CEO. The managerial performance of these CEOs didn't spike on Friday. This had to do with the killing of someone on the other side of the planet. And the most disturbing thing about this is that it should open people's eyes to the fact that we have a profit motive for war. When you have a military-industrial complex of the size that we do, when you have unlimited amounts of compensation that can go to the leaders of these military contractors, we'll always have to worry about whether part of the motivation for a march to war might be the personal profit incentives of these individual executives.
You know, that is really just disgusting. It really is. I mean, I just cannot. You sometimes wonder if any of these people have actually served in war themselves personally. No, I'm serious.
Yeah.
Or maybe even better that they would be a civilian under attack in some of these areas, and maybe they wouldn't want to spend so much time and efforts in their life to make these incredible weapons of murder. And there you have it. And I thought it was interesting because I went through your list. Lockheed Martin, well, they made the Hellfire missile that was used in the attack,
yeah.
On the Baghdad airport, and they went up 3.6%. But also I thought it was interesting that General Atomics, that they made the Reaper, the MQ-9 Reaper, and that actually that's a private corporation, and so we don't know exactly how much that person, Neil Bush, makes, but he's also invested in oil. But then you also, I guess Boeing stock didn't go up, but there, we're looking at, the MAX 737, and, finally the resignation, or I don't know if he was actually fired, of what the Dennis Muhlenberg, whatever his name is, that actually you've got a man that's, that okayed the release of a plane that totally was not ready to go out into the commercial market, and the number of crashes they have had, and frankly, the deaths. And yet that person is worth, $44 million? I mean, to me, there's almost something wrong that if somebody can walk away from a situation like that when corners were cut for the safety and they got out in the commercial aircrafts and the number of people that have died in those crashes, there is something seriously wrong that that person can just resign and frankly have enough money for an entire city to do quite well.
Right. Well, you really nailed it. It is appalling. I read, too, that the money that they're offering the victims of those 737 MAX crashes is a small fraction of what the CEO is likely to walk away with. He's still negotiating his exit package. But, you know, it seems so outrageous to the ordinary person. And the argument on the other side is, well, look at how much responsibility these CEOs have. Look at how much risk they take in taking these jobs. Look at how many people they have to manage. But if you compare, look at these CEOs versus like military generals who make a very small fraction of what these private corporate CEOs make. Military generals, you know, you can't argue that they have a lot less risk or responsibility than these private sector companies. And so I'm just hoping that, you know, this is a really disturbing moment. We have a little bit of a lull, it seems, in the, you know, the escalation, but people don't think the conflict is over by any means with Iran. And I just hope it'll be an educational moment to make people see that war profiteering remains a big problem and we can end it. You know, this is our taxpayer money that is inflating the paychecks of these CEOs. They're relying on our funding of these contracts and we can put restrictions on those contracts. Senator Sanders has a plan where he would cap CEO pay at contractors at no more than 150 times what the typical worker at these companies make. So that's one approach. But we should be demanding that our taxpayer money should not be going just as funneled into the pockets of these executives. It's not the lower level people at these companies who are making a lot. It's really the guys at the top. And we can put an end to that.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that I noticed that you wrote an article talking about the tax dollars, where our money goes. And that for every dollar, you know, tax dollar, that 24 cents goes to the military. But only 5 cents of that actually goes to the soldier, you know, for their needs, so to speak. 12 cents goes to military contractors. And way back in 2008, Senator McLean, you know, said that any head of these that gets a military contract, or I think a private contract period from the government, actually should be limited to the salary of the president, which was $400,000. And Bernie Sanders, I think, has also suggested that that be extended. And, you know, that we're back to the soldier. And, you know, you mentioned that the generals and the military officers, but particularly the soldier doesn't begin to get those kind of profits. And you know, that, and even if you factor in the amount of the veterans' hospitals, it doesn't come close. And I think that this, and I'm thinking of Lockheed Martin, and, you know, while they make the Hellfire missiles, but don't they also make F-35s that are kind of notorious? You know, they are way behind schedule. And isn't that the plane that actually spontaneously combusted in an airfield? I mean,
yeah.
And how much does each one of those planes cost? About?
I mean, we're talking about billions and billions of dollars. Lockheed Martin has been at the top of the military contractor list for many, many years. And so it is just outrageous. And just to, you know, play devil's advocate a little bit again, some people have said, well, what would happen if we didn't have this huge military industrial complex? What about all the people who work for these contractors? And I, you know, I take that question seriously because we don't have a ton of good paying jobs in this country, and a lot of the jobs, they're not making the levels of the CEOs, but a lot of jobs for these aircraft manufacturers and others are decent jobs. But think about all of the talent that is being put into building these weapons of destruction. Engineers, computer scientists, some of the top talent in this country that is going for that purpose that could be redirected into things that are life-sustaining, that would help ensure that we can deal with climate change. Think about all the great minds that are right now building weapons that could instead be going into how do we build more efficient transportation systems, more ways to protect people from the disaster of climate change that's coming. We would need a transition, but I think, you know, again, let's look at this as an educational moment. We need to transition away from a war economy that has been privatized, that benefits the top executives at these companies primarily, and figure out how to shift to a more peaceful economy that is going to position this country much better for the future.
And real quickly, Sarah, I'm pretty concerned about these economic sanctions that we have been using for years on many countries. And I just don't think we have any idea, particularly as civilians, what an imposition, what really a real hardship this puts on to the civilians of that country. And if we ever want to come to some kind of peaceful resolution with the problems we're having there, that I don't think you want to starve and make potable water and drugs and all that kind of stuff pretty much inaccessible. And what do you think about the use of economic sanctions as, to me, as a method of war?
Right. Yeah, it's often posed that we have an alternative between either, you know, violent war or sanctions. But people die from sanctions, too. I have a colleague down the hall who is Iranian-American who's been in touch daily with her family over there, and they are hungry. I mean, they're probably better off than some of the rest of the people, but they are already really suffering as a result of the U.S. sanctions. So the emphasis here should really be on diplomacy, going back to the nuclear deal and trying to renegotiate that, reenact that, and also people should be pushing Congress. There's going to be a vote today on the House floor around war powers to have the Congress really reclaim their constitutional authority over decisions on war. I'm sure I'm not the only person who's feeling really nervous right now about the decision making that led to this attack and the lack of thinking through what really could be implications that we might be facing for decades to come.
No, and I was interested when some of the senators actually were coming out from the briefing, and they were pretty disgusted. And did you also hear that, some of the senators' comments on the inadequacy they felt of that briefing yesterday?
Uh-huh. Yeah, I mean, they were kept in the dark before the assassination. They're not getting the information that they were hoping to about, there are these claims that this was a defensive move, that it was meant to prevent an escalation of conflict, and we're just not seeing the data to really back that up. So for those of us who were engaged in the opposition to the Iraq War so many years ago now, this is feeling a lot like deja vu. The false claims about weapons of mass destruction that was used to lay the foundation for that war, the profits being, the incredible windfalls that the military contractors stand to make, the potential for fraud and abuse of taxpayer money to support a war that will probably make us less safe than safer in this country.
Well, Sarah Anderson with the Institute for Policy Studies. She's a Global Economy Project Director. Keep up the great work, and thanks so much for your article. Really appreciate it, and appreciate the time you've given us today. You do take care.
Absolutely. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Uh-huh. Bye-bye. And Arlene, we got a lot of work to do, a lot of work cut out for all of us, but these are exciting times. You can make a difference. Get yourself informed. Get out there. Have your voice. I really think that peacefully we need to be on the streets now, really letting our opinions be known. Our politicians need some fire put under their feet to, hey, we don't want any more war,
And also on the phones, call your representative. Call your senators, those of you here in Florida, Marco Rubio, and, my brain's gone dead, Mary.
Scott.
Scott, yes. I like to try to forget him. But anyway, let them know how you feel about the war in Iraq, the War Powers Act, the impeachment keep those phone lines busy.
Okay, Arlene, do you have any more announcements?
Not that I need to make today, although I will share this, and then I'll share it again next week, and that is that on the 22nd, there will be a Roe v. Wade anniversary visibility event that will be at noon in St. Petersburg at Central Avenue and 2nd Street, 277 Central Avenue in St. Petersburg. You can join the annual sign waving there.
And you have been listening to WMNF Tampa, Sarasota Clearwater Community Conscious Radio. Keep it tuned here all day, people.